I'm ready when you are then, sir.
Okay, take it away, Simon.
Well, hello. Welcome to Crave. This is the podcast dedicated to music, to film, theatre, television, basically anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And this week we've got a bumper edition with big names in rock in our backyards, indeed. I've been to see the Foo Fighters at Mount Smart Stadium.
I've done the 70s time warp thing to catch up with the Stranglers at the Auckland Town Hall.
Bet that was a peach of a show.
Oh! There'll be more to say about that too. Okay, go on. Now,
moving swiftly onwards, I had the great good fortune of sampling a smorgasbord of musical delights at the annual Laneway Festival in Albert Park in Auckland.
Oh, a smorgasbord. I'm looking forward to a taste of that. On the movie front, now, as you've been listening to us the last little while, we have been checking out some of the films that are in the running for this year's Oscars. We're doing it again. Tidying up our list of possible winners. In particular, we're looking at the Gary Oldman virtuoso performance of Churchill in Darkest Hour.
Yes, and also the darkly comic, sometimes disturbing but endlessly engaging and entertaining story, and possibly even true, we're not sure, of Tonya Harding, the American ice skater, and her troubled life and times in I, Tonya.
It's a very clever way of telling you that you may not necessarily believe what you're watching. But anyway, we'll get to that. It's very much music that's kept us busy in the last few days. Now, apart from listening to Steve and I chat about the music right now, we have posted our written reviews on our website. That's cravepodcast.com. And you will find excellent photo galleries of the aforementioned performances by the Foo Fighters and the Stranglers. And, Steve, we should also mention something rather new on the website. Tell us about this. A chance to win some concert tickets. Please, inform.
Yes, this is an opportunity to win tickets to see Ben Folds at the Power Station in Auckland, coming up very, very shortly. These is completely free. Go to the podcast website, cravepodcast.com, as Simon mentioned there. Go to our podcast, fill in a form with your name and an email address, and you will be in to win two completely free tickets. Full details at the website. Don't miss it.
And just, we should say very quickly, because I don't really know much about Ben Folds, just quickly, what sort of an artist is Ben?
He's a little bit hard to pin down. He's now gone solo. He was originally in a band called Ben Folds 5.
Right.
And it's sort of like piano soft rock. I don't know how flattered he would be with references to Elton John or Billy Joel, but he's sort of an alt stroke indie version of that kind of music. But what's interesting about the show he's doing this time is, in the second half of the show, he's calling it the Paper Aeroplane Request Set. And the little gimmick that he's doing, and I don't really like the sound of this myself.
Yeah, sounds good.
Is audience members are encouraged to write their song requests on a piece of paper, fold into a paper plane, and biff it at him. He will then randomly select and perform the songs based on the paper aeroplanes that land closest to him.
How very quaint. Hell, it's excellent.
I think it's a fantastic gimmick. So if you want to be part of that, I'll say it again. Get yourself to cravepodcast.com. There's a link to the draw on the front page. Click on that, get yourself in to win, and we'll see you there.
Fantastic. We do aim to please here at Crave. Just
other people aim to hit Ben Folds.
That's right. But we just aim to please. We should also mention, Steve, that of late, we're going to get to the actual reviews, don't worry. But of late, we have been adding something else to our website, which is the opportunity, and I'm sure people are just giddy at the thought of it, to actually watch us have a chat about something. There is the opportunity to pick one of the topics we discuss, and we put it on YouTube, for goodness sake.
I know, because really we have nothing better to do with our time at shopping.
We're shameless self-promoters here. Anyway, if you have any sort of morbid curiosity about what Steve and I look like when we're chatting about these things, you're very welcome to have a check that out. Anyway, Steve, let's get on to some music.
I think we ought to, really.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Now, look, it's been a pretty wet summer in the last few days, particularly all over the country, and I gather that the tens of thousands who showed up for the Foo Fighters the other night did not escape the rain, but did it get in the way of a good show, Steve McCabe?
Well, this was the Foo Fighters at Mount Smart Stadium just a couple of nights ago, and oh dear Lord, it rained. it rained heavily, and there's about 40 odd thousand people there who stood in the rain for, well, the folks at the front who showed up for the two opening acts is a punk band called Ayn Randy from Wellington, and then there's Weezer. I don't know if you're familiar with them, slightly alternative rock band from the US. And I mean, the show kicked off around 4, and I guess people were probably in position long ahead of that. But basically, people were the proverbial drowned rats even before the Foo Fighters came on stage. Now, about the show.
Yes.
Are you a Foo Fighters fan, Simon?
Well, I read your review on cravepodcast.com with interest, because I'm just of that generation where I'm not... I was the 10 years before, so didn't really buy into them at that time. I know they've done some excellent songs. I'm familiar with some of their bigger songs, but I haven't been a big follower of them. I know about Grohl being previously the drummer with Nirvana and all that part of the backstory. And I've seen, they pop up quite a lot. They seem to be kind of political in many ways, and but I'm not sure if I would bust a gut to see them. Although I'm sure they'd put on a good rock show.
Well, they put on a fantastic show. They put on a very professional, very slick, very polished show.
Yeah.
The only problem is the music is here's the problem, right? You mentioned that this was the man who used to play drums in Nirvana. And it saddened me to think of that fact when I was listening to him play what felt to me like it's like he's like a heavy Phil Collins.
Really?
It feels like music for people who don't really know too much about music. It's almost like heavy metal easy listening.
It's, wow, that's interesting.
It's very, very good. It's very, very, very good. Mm. But there's not much to it. There's very little behind the front, I felt. There were moments, I have to be honest, there were moments when... he actually sort of let go and allowed himself to snarl and to growl a little bit. There's a couple of songs. There's one called Let It Die in particular from their first album, which on record is a pleasingly dark song.
Right.
On stage is frankly terrifying. And when he gets around to playing songs like that, you think this fella's brilliant.
Yeah.
Except that then he plays songs like Big Me, which is frankly... throwaway pop, and you're thinking, this is the man who played the drums on Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it's hard to forgive him when you think about that.
Okay. Hey, one song that I wanted to ask you, one song I remember hearing when it came out on an album, and I thought, boy, he's putting his voice through the mill there. It's so raspy, and I don't know if he's got anything left by the end of the song. That was Best of You.
Yeah, he closed the main set with that. Yes.
Okay. And was that a good show?
Again, there were a couple of good moments when you could tell he was really, really putting himself into
it. Right,
Monkey Wrench was quite impressive. There were a few good songs. These Days started off with a very, very powerful guitar intro. It went downhill quickly and went into the sort of standard chug, chug, grind, chug kind of thing that they do.
Right.
But yeah. you'll notice that I keep talking about Dave Grohl.
Yes.
There were
yes.
five other men on stage.
Right.
And he can't quite decide. He seriously can't decide. Is it his own pet project with a backing band? Or is it a band in its own right? And so it comes and goes. And he can't quite pin him down on what exactly he's doing. And it's a strange show in that regard. Sometimes, hey, these are all my buddies and we're in this together. Other times, it's the Dave Grohl show. And you can never quite figure out what's going on. He doesn't know what he's doing either half the time. When they were really good, they were doing covers of Kiss songs. Or the drummer sang Under Pressure by Queen. That's when they were really good.
Do you think that most of the people there sort of were feeling your types of reservations, or were they just all buying into it 110,000%?
I will very cheerfully admit that this is a minority opinion. I looked around the crowd, and I've seen a lot of shows lately at Mount Smart, and that's one of the most enthusiastic and engaged audiences I've seen in a hell of a long time. So clearly I was missing something. One thing I know I didn't miss out on, I took a guest with me, fellow concert photographer, and she's a big Foo Fighters fan. And she at one point turned to me and said, can he please just shut up?
Or could he please shut up? Was he rambling on a bit, wasn't it?
And endless. You guys are crazy. You make so much noise. You're the best audience ever. And I bet you say that to all the boys, don't you, Dave? So in the end, it just felt hollow and it felt fake and it felt like masses of astonishingly good front And when there was substance behind it, when the songs were good, oh yeah, you can see what the fuss is about. Yeah. I just didn't feel like there was quite enough of them, to be honest.
Okay. All right. So I, having heard all that, I still don't know if I would necessarily go and see them myself. I possibly wouldn't. I mean, that's probably a terrible thing to say, admit to, but
I'm not selling it, am I? I'm really not.
That's okay. Hey, you just got to tell it. You got to call it like you see it.
Well, tell us about a good concert then, Simon.
Well, actually, I want to tell you. Yeah, I'm going to tell you about the Stranglers.
Yeah.
At the Auckland Town Hall. And just to pick up, this is a really interesting little segue here. I'm always looking for segues. There's one parked outside as we speak.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. You just talked about Dave Grohl saying what a great crowd they were and blah, 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 blah. The same thing happened in the Auckland Town Hall when the Stranglers, the, you know, who launched to fame in the 70s with a whole bunch of punky sort of songs.
Oh, yeah.
Not all of them, but some of them were. Their front guy at one point, Baz Warren, he's the main vocalist and guitar player, he said, you guys live in a great country. And, of course, we've all heard that 1,000,006 times before. But then he said, see, because I was in Wellington the other day, I needed to get to Auckland, and there was a cyclone. We don't have cyclones in England, he said.
True.
And some guy offered me a ride. So I took it. So I drove all the way from Wellington to Auckland, and I got to see your country. And actually, it's a beautiful place. So when you say that,
yeah,
and you've actually done something, then you've scored some credits, haven't you? You've kind of said, "I'm not just this isn't some trite remark I'm trotting out. This is for real." So he actually, I think that was a very nice way of just saying a little something that just showed, hey, I'm actually here. And he
By contrast, Dave Grohl's biggest insight was the fact that he'd noticed in his hotel room the night this keyboard player uses blue Listerine. Yeah, that's okay. way more audience engagement. That one I can get behind.
Yeah, and so this was a show for it's called the Classic Collection Tour. It's at the Auckland Town Hall. It was packed. It was the downstairs. It was just standing. A lot of people my age and older, many of them dressed in black T-shirts with the Stranglers logo and that rat, the rat under there.
Yep.
There. These guys had attitude. They had energy. They had some cheek. They went through their songs pretty much full tilt. It was about an hour and a half show. Yep. It wasn't massively long, but it was a really good set. And again, Baz Warren got on the right side of people pretty early on when he said, look, something? Back in 1979, the Stranglers were going to come to the Auckland Town Hall, and management decided we weren't right for this sort of venue.
Oh.
39 years later, we are here.
Good for him.
Of course, everyone went, yahoo, and we got into it. Everyone totally enjoyed the show. These guys, it's not the... Two of them are the original Stranglers. That's the, if I can put it like that, you've got to take your strangling seriously. We're talking about the keyboardist, Dave Greenfield. He's an original. The bass player, Jean-Jacques Burnell.
Yes.
He is also an original. Now,
well, you know what they say, there's no more heroes anymore, mate.
No. Ba-da-ch.
I was waiting for an opportunity to shoehorn that one in. I knew it was coming.
So Baz Ward, he's not an original, but he's been there for at least 15 years, I think.
Yeah.
And the original drummer is Jet Black. He doesn't tour anymore. So there's another drummer called Jim McCauley who does that. But look, they just had everyone was into it. I have to say this, though. Personally, I didn't know – there were quite a number of songs I just didn't know.
Yep.
I knew the big songs.
Yep.
But there was probably at least half of them which were not songs I'd heard before. But, it was you just got caught up in the enthusiasm of the crowd. It was – good show. But here's the thing, and you alluded to this a little earlier, Mr. McCabe.
I did indeed.
This is the Classics Collection. And if there's one Stranglers song you'd expect to hear in that, what would you think that would be?
Well, we've mentioned No More Heroes, and I mean, I'd be looking to strangle them if they didn't play Golden Brown, but they must have played Peaches, surely.
Well, you would think. You would think. Isn't that one of the most classic, maybe one of the most famous bass lines in any rock song?
There's not many songs like that that open with such a stonking bass line.
Yes, yes. And they did not play that song. They did not play another really good one, Skin Deep, either, which was a really big hit of theirs. So, and here's the thing. You know, they came back for the encore. No More Heroes was the last song, as it turned out, of the encore. The lights come on, which tells everyone that the show's over.
Yeah.
And no one leaves. We all stand there for a few minutes thinking, hold on, where's Peaches? and it just took quite a while for it to sink in. And there was some palpable disappointment. And if you've seen my review on the Crave podcast website, you'll notice that I took a photo of the set list, which was handed out. And Peaches was on the set list.
This is really sitting badly with you, isn't it? This is troubling you.
It's interesting. There must have been a decision late in the piece that they thought maybe they – I know they must have played that song so many times. But if you're having a tour called the Classics, I think we're entitled to expect that song. So, it was a great show. I don't want this to
– But you know what? I go even a step further than that. I mean, you can call the tour Susan if you want to. The fact is you've got, 1,000 paying punters. What's the one song they want to hear?
Yeah. Now, that is that. So I was really – I have to say I was looking forward to hearing it, as clearly everyone else was. I was disappointed, but it was a good concert. I mean, everyone enjoyed it. And just very quickly, there was a three-piece punk band who were all in their probably 60s or 70s.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
Called The Ruts. Had you heard of The Ruts before? R-U-T-Z?
No, this is Ruts DC, isn't it?
That's it.
Their full glory.
Yes. And I hadn't... one or two songs were vaguely familiar. It took a while. They just did 40 minutes flat out, and they absolutely won people over. And I have to say this, it reminded me of that sort of punk feeling of back when I was a teenager, just sort of flat out, not particularly melodic, a lot of shouting, full on. But here these guys are, well into their middle age and beyond, still doing it. And so you had to sort of give them some credit for that. So
they're an inspiration to all of us.
So if the Stranglers do come back, and they may very well, and if you're of that ilk, you know, and you're of that generation, I think you're going to enjoy it. And maybe this time they'll play Peaches. Right. So that's that.
Okay, I think we need to move on, Si. I think you need to shake this off.
I know. I'm going to be tossing and turning about that. Listen, there's more music you've been to, which I couldn't get to, but what an event. It sounds like there was more musical acts than you could shake a stick at. That's the Laneway Festival in Auckland the other week. Probably too many acts for you to mention all of them, Steve.
Oh, well, too many to see, even.
Yeah, so but one highlight, maybe one low light from you?
Well, I just mentioned like the event itself, to be honest, was one of the highlights.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the Laneway Festival we're talking about, held on the Auckland Anniversary Day. And for the longest time, after it had been spun off from literally the laneways of Melbourne, and they're holding a comparable event in Singapore even these days. But they were originally doing this down at the Silo Park venue in Auckland. And from what I can gather, I never made it there. That was not well suited. But it's now Albert Park in Auckland, right by the university there. And you'd be hard pressed to find a better venue.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's a beautifully set up festival. The four stages on the go, and there's usually at least two bands, two acts playing at any given moment. So you just walk around the park, and you go down to the end of Princess Street and catch a band on that stage. You'll go down to the Rotunda and see a band down there, and you just keep on going around. And it was a storming hot day, but there's plenty of shade. There was loads of water available, lots of food, and it was just a good day to be there. It was a nice day out. I was exhausted at the end of it, but I was glad I went because I saw, for example. I don't know if you're familiar with a British band called Wolf Alice.
I think I've heard that name, but I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, they describe themselves as poppy rock.
Mm-hmm.
I think they forgot the poppy bit on the way over. It was one of the angriest, shoutiest, yelliest sets of songs I've heard in a long time, but they were fantastic.
Wow.
I knew the name before I saw them. I wasn't terribly familiar with the music, but I am now. I've been looking them up, and I'm really glad I found them. There was a bunch from Perth called Pond,
right?
Who who play some pretty impressive, pretty heavy psychedelic rock.
Yeah.
Very tight, very strong. I was a little bit concerned about the singer. I think he possibly needs to seek some sort of professional help.
Oh dear.
That just meant that, oh dear Lord, he was an engaging frontman.
Yeah, okay.
They were brilliant. By contrast, there was another one I was looking forward to see called Conan Moccasin.
Yeah. Great name.
And I was looking forward to seeing him because, yeah, you see the posters around town for his last tour, and he sort of makes himself up to look like Brian Jones out of the Rolling Stones.
Okay, yeah.
The late, great, departed Brian Jones. He came on stage in this ridiculous, basically a pair of pyjamas and a big caballero's hat. His guitarist was bowing his guitar strings with a drumstick. And the whole thing felt so forced and mannered and, oh, look at me, aren't I crazy? And I'm just so wacky and so zany. And I thought, yeah. No, you're not, mate. No, you're not. You're just putting it on. And I just walked away feeling a bit disappointed from that. Huh. So then I went to see Unitone Hi-Fi. We got an interview with Stinky Jim, one of the three original members of the band, that's on the website, on the review page for Laneway. And I actually had to walk away from their set because their bass player had his bass so high in the mix that it hurt.
Ooh.
Literally, ooh. Viscerally, I could feel my guts being pounded. Wow. I've never actually had to walk away from a concert before. It's actually a physically uncomfortable show. But don't let that make it sound like it was a bad day. It's one of the best days out I've had at a concert in a very, very long time.
Excellent. So it's going to come around in a year's time. So if we can, we should go.
Yeah. And I also I'm led to believe that they've got Albert Park booked for another 5 years.
Good, good, good. Great.
It's where it belongs.
Excellent. Okay. It's Laneway Festival in Auckland roundabout. Well, it is on anniversary weekend every year. So, hey, Steve, a few months back, he says, turning to the film genre, we both really liked director Stephen Nolan's sweeping epic called Dunkirk.
Was that a brother of Christopher Nolan, by any chance?
What did I call him?
Stephen.
Did I call him Stephen Nolan?
You did.
God, you're a pervasive bugger, aren't you? You're creeping into my lexicon.
I get everywhere, mate, yeah.
Let's go with Christopher Nolan, shall we?
I think he'd prefer it, yeah.
Yes. Anyway, we liked that Nolan film, and we knew that coming up soonish was going to be another British film about the Second World War, very much focused on Winston Churchill. It's been out for a week or two. It's called Darkest Hour. Pretty high expectations of this, particularly over the performance of Gary Oldman in the lead role. So, how high were your expectations and were they met, is my question.
Well, I'm going to guess, Simon, my expectations were every bit as high as yours were, having seen the trailers and heard the buzz and knowing everything about it. I spoke to my dad on the phone. He's a big World War II buff.
Right.
It opened in the UK before it did here. I had a chat with my dad and he said it's the best film he'd ever seen. So I was expecting greatness when I went in, and I think you'll possibly agree with me when I say I don't think I was disappointed.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It was good. It was incredibly
engaging. I like the way you stopped there to sort of piece your way through the double negatives in that sentence.
But, yeah. Sorry. This has been an interesting film for me because I had my initial reaction, which was very, very positive, particularly because I thought Gary Oldman was just captivating, and he probably should win an Oscar for that, I think. And I let a bit of time, you know, pass, and it sifted in and out of my mind. And I read some of the other reviews, and there's been quite a bit written about this, and there's been quite a vein of criticism that the film just tinkers with the history too much and created some scenes which didn't occur, changed the way certain characters behaved, in particular gave Churchill a very would you say, Steve? I mean, they showed him to be it was a pretty rounded portrait in terms of he wasn't always this bulldog steadfast, was he? He had moments of doubt and so forth. And some people just don't like that because it meddles with the myth of the man. So I've been thinking about that. I just wondered, as you, as an originally of British, British living in that part of the world, whether it played in any sort of disturbing or way for you in that it showed Churchill perhaps not to be such a golden boy as he might have been.
I have a feeling, given that he routinely gets voted greatest Englishman in history, that his place in history, his legacy is fairly secure, and can handle more than this, a less than hagiographic retelling of his history. I think it was fairly sympathetic to him, to be perfectly honest.
I think it was. Yeah, sorry.
There was barely a scene when he wasn't front and center.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was sympathetic, but it did give you, it didn't shy from the fact that he was, and they made quite a bit of this, wasn't they, that by various characters, and even he himself acknowledged, yes, he'd been, accused of military failings in the past, particularly at Gallipoli. You know, we saw that he was egotistical, we saw he was pretty bad-tempered, we saw he was a drinker, clearly ambitious. So they didn't try and hide that side of things. And probably the thing that was really interesting, and we shouldn't give too much of the actual story away, Steve, was that tells very much that the period from him gaining the prime ministership right through to the famous "We shall fight them on the beaches" speech. And we see a really interesting sequence leading up to that speech, don't we, on the way to the Houses of Parliament, which I know, speaking to some people who saw it, found really objected to it. They found it very contrived, made up, and showed Churchill to be wavering in his resolve about, battling on and not caving into some sort of negotiation with Hitler. I'm not going to throw the ball back in your court. I found that actually a very engaging scene, and I really got swept up in the emotion of it. But that was a really pivotal scene in the film. How did it play for you?
I'm really torn. I know the scene you're talking about. And it's a scene where he basically seeks the wisdom of the people.
Yes.
It's fair to say that he had masses of public confidence and certainty and assuredness that was backed up by hours of being racked with private doubt.
Yeah.
And so they had to do something to get him from doubt to certainty. There had to be something some sort of catalyst that made him make his mind up. And so I suspect that that's the reason that scene was, sadly, as far as we can tell, created from whole cloth, which is the bit of it that kind of troubles me. Yes, they had to get him to have an epiphany, but the scene did feel sufficiently contrived to me that it didn't sit well. His character in that particular scene was so much lighter. The entire tone of the scene didn't even really fit well with the overall mood of the film itself. The film is very dark in its tone. The colours are very sombre and muted, as befits the winter of war in England.
Yeah.
And yet suddenly, well, this is one brief scene where, even though the colours aren't necessarily that much lighter, the tone and the mood is much almost frivolous. And he makes a joke about a baby. And you're thinking, that just doesn't quite sit with the rest of the film.
Yeah, well, so we won't say too much more for fear of giving it away, but certainly it is, as Steve said, contrived. The only thing the director tries to do to give a wee taster of it earlier in the film, there are a couple of sequences in the film where Churchill's in a car,
in a cab,
and the camera's tracking along people along the sidewalk, just the ordinary people of London going about their lives. And I guess that's somehow trying to give a sense that this is the man who's gazing out on his people, if you like, maybe trying to sort of give a sense of he's got to represent them, do the right thing for them. But I don't know if that worked to a certain extent, but I still enjoyed that scene that Steve and I are talking about. It was emotionally satisfying, but it was contrived.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen them do more with Lily James' character, Elizabeth Layton. This is the girl, as they were known back then, the girl, who was his basically his personal secretary. You call him a PA, I guess, these days.
Yeah.
And there is a brief moment where she has a photo on her desk of her brother.
Yes.
Who is involved in the Dunkirk fiasco, and that's an opportunity for him to connect with the real people. And I would have liked to pursued that angle a lot more. As it is, though, I mean, I would also like to see more of Lily James' character. I think she's a cracking young actress, and they didn't really quite give her character enough to do. She was very much a foil for him, and it occurred to me at the end they could possibly have taken her out of the entire film, and I don't know that you'd have missed her.
No, interesting actually, because another very, very good film about a World War II leader. This is the German film called Downfall. It was about Hitler's last few days.
Famous.
I don't know if you've ever seen that. That film is told from the point of view of Hitler's PA.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
And it works very, very well. But anyway, that's an aside. I thought that the other thing I thought that did work well in this film was Churchill needed to have some, you know, dramatic counterparts, some foils to be battling against. So I thought that initially King George the Sixth, if I've got my numbers right.
George the Sixth,
Ben Mendelsohn played him. I enjoyed his performance. And Stephen Delane, who I still keep thinking of him in Game of Thrones, but his Halifax portrayal was good, I thought. And they worked well as counters to Churchill as we go through the story.
Although his character did give us one of the most clanging and clunking lines of expository dialogue I've heard in quite a while.
Okay, remind me, which
Earlier in the film, when they were contemplating who would replace Neville Chamberlain, who had lost the support of the House, and a bunch of high placed politicians and movers and shakers, including Lord Halifax himself, sit at a dinner table, and one of them says, "Well, what do we think of the possibility of Lord Halifax, the Foreign Secretary?"
Yes,
and I'm thinking that's a bit on the nose. There were a couple of moments when you obviously, you know, there's going to be a lot of people watching this film, especially the ones who aren't British, who might not necessarily know who Lord Halifax was. But there's got to be a better way of getting a description of him in than something that's quite as honking as that.
Yeah. And we should mention the writer, Anthony McCartan, is a New Zealander, by the way. But I think overall,
I apologise.
Not at all. There is some tweaking of history here. There's no doubt about it. That's the question all the time when you talk about films about real people is, are you seeing a document of record? Well, no, you're not seeing a document of record. It is an interpretation. It is a piece of entertainment. A lot of it's going to be true, but and some of it's not. So you've kind of get your head around that, don't you? And it's just the degree to which the film troubles you or doesn't trouble you as it takes you on its little journey.
I think that's a very fair comment, really. Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
but overall, great.
Wait, there's one thing we've not talked about.
Yes.
Gary Oldman.
How are you, Gary Oldman? Gary Oldman.
I mean,
Gary
Oldman. You know he's going to win the Oscar for this, don't you?
Well, I hope he does. I mean, there's some fantastic makeup, but that's not the reason to win the Oscar. But he inhabits the character, shall we say, and the makeup allows him to do that.
Yes.
He is, as you said earlier, Steve, he's front and center almost the whole time of the film. It's his film. I just thought he gave us some complexity. He gave us some nuance. We talked about the scene towards the end where he shows a lighter side. He shows him having his temper, the doubt and the determination at the same time, and the bluster and all that. And I just thought, this is a guy who's into it. He's delivering a role he knows is a role that means so much to so many people. Not that that should matter, but it does, especially if you're a Brit, I guess. And I enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed his performance.
Yeah, I think also worth an honourable mention would be Kristin Scott Thomas as his long-suffering wife, Clemmie, who was the only person who could ever actually speak truth to power with Churchill.
I
found the scenes with the two of them together were quite deftly done.
Yeah, she's a very, very good actress. Okay, so we're going to recommend this film, are we not?
Oh, wholeheartedly.
Yes, my word. I think it's been out for a little while, and the Oscars are about still a few weeks away, aren't they, Steve? So March sometime, I think.
Yeah, early March, I believe, yes.
Yeah, so I think he's got a... actually, just while we're talking, because we can do this, because we have the technology.
We have.
Who's he up against in Best Actor? He's up against Timothy Chalamet in Call Me By Your Name, which I haven't seen. Daniel Day-Lewis, who must be a threat. Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out, which we both saw and really enjoyed that, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And Denzel Washington. Roman J. Israel, Esquire. I have not seen that film, I have to say.
No,
so
that's only just opened in the UK. It's not opened over here yet.
No. So, look, I have to be honest, some of his rivals, not that the world comes to an end or not, whether you win an Oscar, but I would have thought he is a strong favorite, although Daniel Day-Lewis would be, he never disappoints, but let's see what happens.
Sounds about right.
Okay. All right, so we've got another film about a real person we've still to discuss.
And again, with Oscar buzz around it, for good reason.
Yeah. This is about the ice skater. And I suppose we can fairly say she was an infamous person. Whoops, I've stopped my camera over. We can say that she was an infamous person in American sporting history. Her name is Tonya Harding. And she was, back in the 90s, mid-90s, publicly implicated, more than implicated, in the bashing of her skating rival, Nancy Kerrigan.
Yes.
Now, we've both seen this, you and I. Stand by, Steve. What was your rating for the skating in this?
I'm not a huge skating fan, I have to be honest.
Yes.
But either there's some phenomenal editing going on in that film, or Margot Robbie has learned to skate remarkably well.
That's right. I think I didn't know it at the time, when I was watching and I thought, this is a fantastic, there's some great sequences of her on the ice.
Yes.
And apparently she can skate, and she did some training. So you are seeing some of her skating.
Right.
And you're also seeing some CGI enhancement. But
that's fair.
Yeah, but this is a really, it looked like almost like a Tarantino on ice sort of film from the trailer. And that's what it was, really.
You're not far wrong there, are you?
No, I think it was violent. It had a lot of profanity, a lot of quirkiness to the storytelling. Straight up the very top, and I'm glad they did this in the telling of the story. They're telling you that the various participants in the film have given interviews, and the story that you're seeing in the film is based on those interviews, and they contradict each other.
Wildly.
So you... The film does not attempt to say this is what actually happened. This was what the attack on Nancy Kerrigan was all about, and this is who knew about it and who, you know, gave the green light to it. We are given different interpretations of it, but it doesn't. I don't think it mattered. I think it added to the telling of the story, and we get some great acting, a cracking script, some genuine tension, and an interesting story that I was taken along by this all the way through. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a strange film. I mean, it's an interesting choice of topic. You know, I mean, Tonya Harding, let's face it, had everything gone to plan, would probably have been the greatest skater ever.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, one of the very greatest.
Yes.
But the reality is, she was white trash. And
yes.
And America doesn't like its white trash very much. Oh. And yeah, she was up against it. And we've got no idea of the actual truth. I don't think we're any the wiser for having seen the film. I mean, it's a darkly funny take on a very, very horrible story.
It is.
And that's down to the fact that you've got astonishing acting from the two female leads in particular.
I agree. So we've got Margot Robbie, the Australian, playing Tonya Harding, and also a wonderful performance from Alison Janney.
I believe it's Janney,
who plays Harding's mother.
Oh, doesn't she just...
She steals a lot of scenes. She's this hard-bitten, rude, violent mother who's just driving her daughter on to succeed. They do a fantastic job. I just want to just quickly come back to the point you made about the white trash, Steve.
Yeah.
Because I think I found that in a way... That's kind of what the story's about, really, isn't it? I mean, we aren't going to get to the nitty-gritty of what happened with the bashing of Nancy Kerrigan. But I found that, in a way, made Tonya Harding a sympathetic character, because we find out how poor she was, that she was uneducated. Her father left the family home when she was a young girl. The mother was a tyrant. Tonya Harding was physically assaulted.
Yeah,
the victim of domestic abuse throughout her life, and as you say, the judges in the middle to upper class world of American ice skating did not like her, the way she talked and the way she looked.
No.
So she was up against it from the get-go. And I think the film does a very good job of at least giving you the sense of that.
And what's astonishing is that even within scenes of horrific abuse that she suffers, whether it's at the hands of her mother or her boyfriend, then her husband, then her ex-husband, Jeff, played by Sebastian Stan, even when she's being horribly abused, it still manages to find proper dark humor in it. You feel guilty laughing sometimes.
Yes, yes.
When she's getting the snot kicked out of her by her own mother, but at the same time, it's done with genuine dark humor. It's a very, very difficult line to toe, that one, I think, and I have the feeling that they did it very, very well.
I think they did too. And the thing I liked about Margot Robbie's performance, because you could argue, like the her mother was a really, really strong character. She has a lot to put up with in the film, and I think she acts like a person might act. You know, she needs her mother. She hates how she's treated, but she needs her mother.
Yes, yes.
She gets angry with her husband, but at times she needs her husband. She's battling against the prejudice of the ice skating judges. So she's on the one hand, she's showing that Tonya Harding to be determined to succeed, but it's the only thing she knows to do. It's the only thing she's good at. So there's an element in the performance, I thought, of like a possum in the headlights, not yes. always being in control of what's going on around her. She's kind of, you know, battered around from pillar to post. But the fact is, she's not an educated person. She's clinging to the one thing that might offer her a better life.
Yes, so that's a very fair assessment, I think.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed her performance for that. And so there was kind of a realistic edge to it, which struck a chord with me, as well as it being at times very funny.
Absolutely, yeah. So Allison Janney's up for Best Supporting Actress Oscar. And I don't know that it's an unrealistic thing. I mean, poor Margot Robbie has actually been nominated for Best Actress in the same year that Frances McDormand's up Three Billboards. And that's just not fair.
No.
Because really nobody else stands much of a chance against her. But I did think that Margot Robbie, I mean, she's proving herself to be a fantastically versatile performer.
Yeah, I agree. I think she's a talented actor, excellent.
Did you see her by any chance in Goodbye, Christopher Robin?
I did not.
She plays Christopher Robin's mother, whose name slips my mind at the moment. But, I mean, she has a knack with accents.
Yeah. I mean, and she's about to play, I've seen a trailer, Steve, for an Australian comedy coming up called Dundee.
Oh.
And she's in that, playing a true blue ochre girl.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, so anyway, she is a talented person. So I think this is a film to be highly recommended.
Definitely.
It's not going to answer any questions about the mystery, if you like, of the attack on Nancy Kerrigan.
No, you use the phrase document of record for Darkest Hour. And they cheerfully admit, I mean, when there's moments when Margot Robbie's character, Tonya, is depicted as beating her husband, Jeff, and she turns to the camera and says, "This didn't happen." even the characters themselves disown the historicity of the film.
Nice little sides to the camera that which work really well. Cool. Okay, great.
I think we're recommending that one, aren't we?
I think we are. So, look, I think it's about time to just mention a few other things coming up. I know there's a lot, Steve, that you put on our Crave podcast website with all the concert musical events coming up. There are a couple of movies on the way as well. I think it's next week. It's February. There must be another superhero movie due, and there is. It's Black Panther, Marvel's Black Panther. That opens next week, which I think I might just have a look at. But what about on the music front? There's quite a bit happening, isn't there? It tends to be a busy time of the year.
Well, there's an interesting mixed bag of announcements.
Yes.
I'm not sure how many of these you'll be able to contain your excitement for, to be perfectly honest.
Glad I'm sitting down.
Absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, it's worth mentioning in the next couple of weeks, there's a few big names going to be popping up. Macklemore is going to be at Spark Arena on the 9th of February, very shortly. Robbie Williams will be performing on the 14th, and then Queen and Adam Lambert on the 17th. So we've got some big names at the arena coming up very shortly.
Yeah.
But recent announcements that are worth mentioning, I'm trying to figure out the best order to mention these in.
Okay.
We'll start off with Postmodern Jukebox. You might be familiar with them. They do sort of swing jazz arrangements of pop hits.
Mm-hmm.
So they're worth Looking at, they're going to be playing. Let's have a look. Where are they going to be? I did have this information. They're actually doing quite an extensive New Zealand tour.
Okay.
Tauranga, Napier, Auckland, New Plymouth, Wellington, and Christchurch.
Right.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
5th of October in Auckland, and you can find the dates at the website. So they're worth a look.
Okay.
Now, I don't know where you stand on Shania Twain.
I don't stand.
Okay, fair enough.
I tend to look the other way. No, I'm sorry, that's a bit harsh.
That's awfully harsh. So on Tuesday, December the 6th, 18th, I won't see you down Spark Arena.
Yeah. Well, being the professional reviewers that we are, we don't necessarily be overly swayed by our own personal preferences.
This is true. So we might even also make it down to Forsyth Barr Stadium in Dunedin.
Yes.
On Saturday the 22nd for Shania's second.
Ooh, that's pushing it.
And we'll see the Twain.
Yeah. Oh, he was waiting for that.
Teed him up, knocked him out.
Yeah, fantastic. My God, this is why they paid the big bucks, you know.
Absolutely. I can eat out for minutes on what I'm getting paid for this. Even better than that, if you thought Shania Twain was going to be good, you're going to be blown away by Celine Dion.
Oh,
it gets better yet. It does.
Oh, okay, yes.
No, Celine Dion is going to be... Now, where am I? I've lost it now. I had it in front of me just a second or two ago. She's definitely coming to Auckland. And I... Bugger. Oh, there we go. Spark Arena is going to be on Saturday the 11th of August.
Okay.
I know you need a palate cleanser after that, because I've clearly not nailed it for you.
Mm. Could there possibly be more?
One night only in New Zealand. 4th of August at the Power Station. It's the Bay City Rollers.
No!
Seriously.
Jeez.
So that's what's been announced in the last week or so.
Okay.
Now there is one, all snark and sarcasm aside, there is one show that I'm actually quite excited about this coming weekend.
Yep.
On Sunday the 11th at the Power Station, it's, I don't know if you're familiar with them, a British trio, two sisters and a brother called Kitty, Daisy and Lewis.
No, I'm not familiar with them, but I understand you're quite keen.
They play sort of the fantastic combination of American... bluegrass, rockabilly, swing, and rock.
Ooh, nice.
And they're from London. And they're an awful lot of fun, and they're going to be at the Power Station on Sunday. And we're hoping, it's not definite yet, but watch this space, we should have an interview with them sometime during the week.
Fantastic. Very good. Okay, so a lot coming up.
That's what's coming up next week, and it's looking good.
It is indeed. So we want to remind you again about our... website cravepodcast.com, where you will find some fantastic photo galleries of the Stranglers and the Foo Fighters. You'll find your chance to win an opportunity to see Ben Folds. If you can bear it, you can even look at Steve and I chatting face to face, sort of, on video. And you can have a chat to us about what you think about what we've been talking about. You can email us.
Because we'd love to hear from you.
We would love to hear from you. Yeah, that would be great. The email address, podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Crave Podcast.
Excellent name. In the meantime, I'm Simon Mercip.
And I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Absolutely.
Oh, we cracked along there.